Hello, everybody out there in internet radio land. This is Blake Ruby. Welcome to my show, Gods and Goddesses. It's a beautiful Saturday afternoon here in San Antonio. Sun is shining. The trees behind our backyard are green, a lot greener than they were last week. In just 1 week, it makes a difference. And spring has really sprung here in Southwest Texas. And I can tell you, because I've lived up north before, that it's a lot different. Up there, I lived in Canada. Born and raised in Canada. And the trees don't really sprout all their leaves. All the trees don't sprout their leaves till around late May. Anyway, I was telling Dawn that I'm getting ready for retirement. I'm 66. And I like what I do. I've been teleworking this last year, and I'm ready to move out of this house and start a new chapter in my life. Hopefully, I can make it happen this summer. Anyway, I've got some things I'm going to do today on the show. One of them is to read for you from one of my favorite websites on the internet called NearDeath.com. People who have had near-death experiences, if you want to learn from the near-death experience, and I think it's a great way to develop yourself spiritually, then this is the website to check out. The webmaster's name is Kevin Williams, called NearDeath, NearDeath.com. And it's got so much great information in there about people who have died and then come back to life, and have a story to share with the world about what to expect when you die. And that's always, for me, it's scary, you know. And I know it is for other people, too. It's like charging hell with a bucket of water kind of thing, you know. You have to be very brave and courageous. And your soul has to want to evolve, you know. Some people, they're complacent, they're satisfied with who they are, what they are, but I think for the most part, people don't know that they have that potential to die, to end their life here on earth, and go somewhere. And I was thinking, also, I'm going to talk about also the extraterrestrials, I believe, that are out there, because I think that it's a no-brainer that there is life elsewhere in the universe, because the creator of all this, and by the way, when you pray, try praying not only to God, use the word God, but also creator of the universe. Creator of the universe, thank you for the miracles of all creation. Every single thing that you see was created. You might see material objects that are man-made, but they're made out of material that God created, right? Let's take a house. The wood in the house, the plastic that came from I'm not sure where, the tiles on top of the roof, asphalt and other ingredients, all made by, you guessed it, the creator of the universe. Everything, there's not one single thing that exists in nature, on this world, on this planet, that wasn't created by the creator. And so, in regard to going back to ETs that I know are out there, life is elsewhere in the universe. And we don't need proof. We can bridge that gap between belief and knowledge with logic and rationale. As I've mentioned before on my show, with all this life here on Earth, and you know there's millions of types of insects in the rainforest alone, in like a square acre, there's in down in Brazil, you know, in the Amazon area. There's over a million types of insects within a few acres That's amazing. I heard that the other day. Then there's also reptiles, birds, fish, and the ocean seas and lakes and rivers. And there's amphibians and mammals. All that life happened by accident. Logically, if you're interested in that, do have a logical mind. Logically, it could happen by accident anywhere. And you know there's other planets out there. They're discovering them all the time. Reality is, my friends, they're every sun, star you see up in the evening sky is a separate solar system. Now, it's true that the light that you see might have already, might be from a sun that supernovaed or novaed, you know, and no longer exists. But I think for the most part, they still are out there, you know, because it takes a long time for light to travel through the material universe, as you know. And planets are everywhere. And the probability that there are other planets like Earth or maybe similar with water, which is the key ingredient if you want life on a planet, is very, very good. The probability is almost certain. But we just don't have concrete evidence. But we don't really need it. We don't need NASA to find life in our solar system or maybe somewhere else, you know, as they become more advanced. Who knows? They might be planning a trip to Alpha Centauri. I doubt it. That's 4 light years away. To see all the planets there. Do you feel a little stirring of exploration in your soul? You know, everyone's watched Star Trek, and it says to boldly go where no man has gone before. Seek out new life. You know, it's out there. So if it happened by accident here, of course it could happen by accident elsewhere, and if you believe in a creator, then logically, if the creator created all this life here on Earth, and the creator being as powerful and knowledgeable as the creator is, he, she could create the same or maybe different life anywhere, and I mean A-N-Y-W-H-E-R-E. And we are stuck in a gap right now. People with false beliefs, unfounded beliefs, are holding back this contact with extraterrestrials. Now, it's true that if you meet one face-to-face, these beings that have the capability to traverse the material universe in a very quick fashion, you know, bending time and space and creating wormholes and going interdimensional from one area of space to another, you know, traversing trillions of miles in a second. It's kind of mind-boggling, but they have the technology because why? It's very simple, my friends. They've been in existence longer than we have, and the rationale behind that is that we're in a spiral arm of the Milky Way galaxy about 15 billion light years from the center of the universe. We're one of the younger species, the younger galaxies, these older ones, and they know life is out there. We just don't because we're a young species, you know? I mean, just think, not too long ago, mankind, I mean, human beings like us, used to believe the world was flat. They used to believe that the world was at the center of the universe and everything revolved around the world. People like you and me have that mindset, you know? Ridiculous now as we look back upon it. Hold on, please. The dogs that we have come and go, and they open the door to the house and go in, and I have to close the door behind them so as not to disturb the people that are in the house. And also for me to have my privacy here, in my patio. Here comes another dog. He's going to want to go in. Hold on. Okay, I let the second dog in. Now, don't get me wrong what I'm about to say here. I believe in the Bible, most of it. I think it's a very good source of wisdom and divine intervention, what happened in our past, better than any other book in the world, but it doesn't have all of the facts of what happened back then. It doesn't have truth, you know, with so many different religions, each one professing to tell the truth. Obviously, that can't happen. That can't be when so many religions say, we know the truth and you don't. There's only one truth, one universal truth. For example, Adam and Eve is a total fantasy, I think. I was talking with my stepdaughter in Japan. She's into Buddhism and shares the same kind of beliefs as me in regard to the Bible. The Garden of Eden, they say that the tree of knowledge was there, and there was a fruit that God supposedly told them not to touch. Why did he tell them not to touch it? A beautiful fruit that was there, was his intention to tempt them, knowing God being all-knowing and all-powerful, would have been able to predict that they would have done that, that they would have tried that fruit. And then, when they did, so it gives me the idea that God, the God of the Bible, was an evil tempter. You know, if you do that, I'm going to punish you. Why? Why would God have done that? I thought God was loving and kind and generous. A kind and generous and loving God wouldn't have done that to them. Why would that fruit have been off limits? Why? So that you eat it and gain knowledge? Knowledge of what? What's wrong with gaining knowledge? You know, how can you limit somebody to gain a particular type of knowledge? That doesn't make any sense. And then they eat the fruit and they're banished from the garden forever. That's not a very loving God that would penalize, that would punish a child in such a way through kind of eternal damnation because they made one mistake, because they took that temptation. Doesn't make any sense to me. I think that's something that a kindergarten child could see through. And the people that believe it are still in kindergarten and need to graduate to the first grade, if you ask me. That's my opinion. And then also in the Bible in Genesis, it says that the world was created, the stars and the planets and the suns were created in 7 days. No, that can't happen in 7 days. You know how long it takes for a solar system to form? A couple hundred thousand years. Just one solar system, not to mention the whole universe. I mean, realistically, you know, with your logical mind, some people are just willing to accept things that are passed on to them. Because why? Because they want to conform. They have to they feel they have to conform. They don't want to be ridiculed. They don't want to be ostracized. They don't want confrontation. They don't want to get into arguments. They just accept it. But again, don't get me wrong, I believe a lot of the Bible, but just not all of it. And when you have beliefs of Adam and Eve and then Jesus coming to atone for the sins, why would God wait 2,000 years or however many years to send somebody to atone for the sins of Adam and Eve when he didn't need to do that at all? Why? You know, there's a good point there to consider. Why wait 2,000 years while people were living in sin, so to speak? Why just not even have had the temptation at all? It's a myth. It's a fantasy. Adam and Eve, it's not true. It's not real. And if you believe that, you're holding up the evolution of the human species, especially to become star travelers, and knowing that there's life out there. believe in Adam and Eve. That's what you're doing. You're slowing down. You're stopping the evolution. It's stuck. It's like it was back in the days when the world, people believed the world was flat. And the universe revolved around it. The point I'm making, my friends, is that just discover the truth. Seek the truth. It's not hard. There's a lot of resources available on the internet. You can stand alone. You can walk alone in life. You don't need intermediaries. You need Jesus. They say that he died on the sins for on the cross for us. Sins, ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. You don't need to be forgiven for sins from an intermediary. And I know I'm touching some nerves out here, some people that are listening, I can tell, but it needs to be said. And I might not be saying it in the perfect way, making a few, my tongue gets tied up because it's a difficult subject to discuss. Jesus died on the cross for one reason, in my opinion, and I'm entitled to my opinion, and that is to be resurrected. And I've talked about this on previous shows. I'm not going to go into it anymore. You can go into the archives of BBS Radio if you want to listen to previous shows, and I'll explain it there. But to think that he died on the cross for our sins is just fantasy, fantasy, fantasy. If you want to be stuck in your fantasy world, go ahead. But just know that you're holding up the evolution of the human race by that kind of a mindset that won't listen to reason and logic. But then I understand, because we're not all the same when it comes to the evolution of our souls. There's a lot of young souls out there, and then there are older souls, more well-traveled, who have had many lives, who have been around the universe. It's like comparing a kindergarten child to a 12th grader or someone who's in college. But yet we're all related. We're kind of like one part, each of us a part of the whole. We're microcosms of the universe, creating the universe. You've ever heard of the superstring theory? It says, in physics, the superstring theory says that all matter is comprised of little strings or ribbons of energy when you look at it down to the smallest particle. And these little strings of energy are vibrating at different frequencies, and they coalesce. And when they coalesce, because of attraction, the laws of attraction and repelling, they form matter. And when they do, then you have all these, you know, all around us, in the universe, planets, you know. Life on planets. It's all matter. In other words, let me restate that. Matter at its conception is really a powerful thought. And thoughts create the strings of energy, the ribbons of energy. So we are, therefore, we are the microcosms of the universe. We create with our words. It's the words that we use that create those strings of energy, which or matter. So we are in the process, I believe, of creating the physical universe. And we can also destroy with our words. Take, for example, profanity. If you use profanity, then you are destroying with your words, not creating. I don't swear, hardly. I can't recall the last time. Even if I hit my thumb with a hammer, I wouldn't swear. You know, I've heard people swear a lot. Profanity is the sign of not being intelligent enough to choose your words wisely and to not lose your temper. Using profanity, in other words, as I mentioned, I believe is destructive. And we are here to use positive words, to create with our words. To catch yourselves whenever we start going into the negative, the dark carriers. Well, I'm going to take a little break right now and shift gears and switch to what I wanted to do, and that was read out loud. It's one of my pet peeves, so to speak. And I mentioned that website. I'm going to read from this website, neardeath.com, about maybe I'll have time to do one or two near-death experiences, and that'll be it. The sun is shining on me. I might have to move my equipment here. Let me try it here for a little while. So one part of this website is called Exceptional Experiences, near-death experiences that are extremely profound and more so than the other ones, you know, unusual ones, really extreme near-death experiences. And as I mentioned before, this will help with our spiritual development so that we can understand who we are, the nature of the universe we live in, and where we're going when we die one day, hopefully far into the future, but who knows, could be tomorrow, right? I'm not being morbid, I'm just saying that's reality. If people are dying, as I speak right now, all over the world, you know that. Babies are being born all over the world as we speak. So, going back, making contact, my friends, with those extraterrestrials that are out there. And you know, the governments, not only the U.S. government, governments all over the world, in other countries, they're holding this information back because they don't know if it's harmful to us. You know, will it be the end of the human race? You know, it's a national security risk. It's understandable. Especially Roswell, for example, after World War II, it kind of left the people who were in charge, because a spaceship was recovered in alien bodies, and that's just one example of lots out there. And another thing was, too, they said, that we can't handle the truth, that we panic, we're inclined to panic. And honestly, my friends, I believe that if we did come face-to-face with an extraterrestrial, knowing just how intelligent they are and what kind of technology they possess, it would be like looking into the sun, you know, or being run over by an M1 tank. I mean, that presence, that aura around them, that energy would be very difficult to take, you know what I mean? But the U.S. government, if you're interested, read on the internet about a man named Bob Lazar, L-A-Z-A-R. He worked at Area 51 at a place called S-4, and he saw him. And you got to believe him, you know. He's a super intelligent guy, in my opinion. You got to love him. And he's had no reason to make this up, because he's been suffering because of the ridicule that people have given him over the years, because he came out, wasn't supposed to tell people what had happened, but they treated him badly, and he forgot about his promise not to tell people. And the U.S. government has these spaceships there at S4, according to him. And so there's a lot of knowledge out there about extraterrestrials that are being withheld. But as I mentioned, we don't need proof to know that they're out there. We can bridge that gap through logic, which I did, you know, saying what I said earlier. And also going back to what I said, that please consider your belief system, whether or not it's true or false. Do you trust in the word of people who who lived many centuries ago and had interactions with the Creator, God, so to speak, where God might have stood over their shoulders and helped them write what they wrote? Or do you think instead that everything they wrote was subject to interpretation and to their limited knowledge? Logically, you know, we're more evolved than they are. Now we have great technology. We're able to send a man to the moon. We've got rovers on Mars. We've sent an expedition to Titan, one of Saturn's moons, and landed a probe on its surface to analyze the atmosphere. We're doing much greater things than the people way back then did. So should we really trust what they say? Why are we so blindly gullible? Why are we so blindly susceptible or trustworthy of what they told us? But still, you know, the Bible, I love the Bible. It's got a lot of great knowledge and wisdom in there and divine intervention like never before. But it isn't entirely true. And, you know, people have gone to war and killed people because they didn't believe what they believe, you know. And my thing is, if you're insecure, you are insecure with your beliefs and feel the need to kill people or change their beliefs to your beliefs because what you believe is not true. If it was true, then you wouldn't feel that need to change somebody's mind. If you were secure with your beliefs, you wouldn't need to change anyone's mind because you'd be secure in knowing that it was true. You understand what I'm saying? So if you feel that need to, you know, he's wrong, you shouldn't be saying that, then your beliefs are mired, founded in untruth. And you need to discover the truth for yourself without anyone telling you that. You don't need an intermediary. You can pray directly. You can get assistance directly from the Creator of your spirit, your soul, your spirit mother and father in heaven, or from the Creator of the universe. It was the spirit. Your mother and father God in heaven who created your soul and spirit are souls just like you who had their own experience in that soul's journey, living on other worlds and developing themselves spiritually and evolving. They lived on planets just like this until they reached the co-creator God status, if you will. That's what you are, too. You're a co-creator God in the making, as it says in my website on BBS Radio. If you can die, you are a co-creator God in the making. Right? So here's an experience by a woman named Jan Price. Now 6:29, I've got 30 minutes left approximately. Jan Price died April the 2nd, 2011, and her husband, John, are the founders of the Quartz Foundation, a research and communications organization whose mission is to probe the mysteries of ageless wisdom and integrating their truths with metaphysical spirituality. The foundation is currently headquarters in Warren, Texas, near San Antonio. Hey, how about that? I didn't realize that. And then I'm going to scroll down to her experiments. On December the 30th, 1993, at 1:35 p.m., Jan Price had a nearly fatal heart attack in which she experienced a wonderful NDE, a near-death experience. At 1:39, 4 minutes later, she returned to life. Jan was destined not to linger in paradise, but to return to the physical world and to the body she had left behind. Her NDE testimony and the many precious lessons it taught her reveals what is most important, that death never need be feared by anyone. Hold on, please. I'm going to move my computer over here. Get out of the sun. And it's going to be a major move here, I think. Okay, that's better. All right, carrying on. And hold on, just a minute. We get something to wipe my screen because I got some dust on my screen here. Okay. Remarkable testimony teaches us about guilt and punishment, forgiveness and transformation, life and love, earth and eternity, all of them, joyfully and unforgettably. Jan's husband, best-selling author John Randolph Price, also contributes to her testimony, sharing his feelings and experiences during this tremendous crisis. While many people are greeted by a being of light during their near-death experience, Jan was greeted by her beloved deceased dog named Maggie. Their new relationship while she was in heaven will astonish you as you learn all about dog heaven. Her experience will show you what happens to your beloved pet when they cross over to the other side. She said, this is what she said, I had absolutely no fear. Not during the heart attack. Hold on. Turning the fan on. It's hot out here. The heart attack was simply increasing discomfort, not frightening, just a growing realization that something was wrong with my body. And though the pain and pressure intensified, I still didn't become apprehensive. I just kept thinking how inconvenient this was. Even when we called EMS, I don't think I really understood the seriousness of my situation. I remember being surprised as I observed the full heart arrest taking place. I suppose we never really think of ourselves as dying, but obviously I had died because I wasn't in my body anymore. Then suddenly I felt something on both sides of me. Not as we might describe a physical touch, but more as a feeling, a sensation of a presence, of entities, more than one. I could see their lights as forms of energy, and I realized that they were angelic beings, loving, pure, holy, and helpful. They were assisting me, and I felt an upward movement. Then everything was blue. I saw and felt the most beautiful blue, neither light nor dark blue, but luminous blue. Floating in this ocean of light-filled blue, I was serene, tranquil, free, and could have happily stayed there forever. I know that I have never felt such peace, a peace beyond calm, beyond words. It is indescribable ecstasy, quiet joy, liquid love, a feeling of incredible ease, the pure pleasure of being with no concern for doing, being one with all that is, suspended and supported in a sea of love, merging with the energy of all that is, came the feeling of completeness. An utter contentment of being complete, of moving into myself and knowing the fullness of me. Then came the golden light, gold, the color of our individual spiritual nature. Suspended in the ocean of blue, golden streams of light like stardust began to pour through me. The light felt so good. If I harbored any lingering heaviness from my life on Earth, I knew it was being taken away. And as the radiation continued, I realized there was no longer any sense of gravity, no pulls from the past, only a wing of being ethereal, gossamer in lightness. Then, like a sweet elixir, the shining rays infused me, washed to the surface a lifetime of memories, beginning with my birth. As the golden light continued to flow, I knew that there was a purpose in the radiation. Old era patterns based mostly on guilt were being dissolved. I was going back into the body without them, for it wasn't time for me to leave permanently. That was one of the good things about dying. The emotional system was clean, and all the false guilt was washed away. The little girl could come out of the closet. She had never done anything wrong. The last thing I'd written in my journal before the heart attack flashed into my mind. One word, transformation. Then the journey into the beyond continued. As the density changed, becoming lighter and finer, I felt that I was being lifted to another level of awareness. And then I found myself in surroundings that appeared to be more substantial. Maggie was there. My beautiful dog, my beloved Springer, came to me. She had died less than a month before, and John and I still ached from her absence. I felt her presence, her love, and she appeared to me as she had when she was in physical form, only younger, more vital. She said, "You know that Daddy can't handle both of us being gone right now." "Yes, I'm going back," I replied. "Will you come soon?" "When it's time, we will know. Now I will show you wondrous things. Let's explore together." If you're having difficulty accepting the idea that my first encounter on the other side was with a dog, you aren't the only one. When John thought it was perfectly natural, one of our daughters became a little upset when I told her about it. I think she would have preferred that her mother be greeted by Jesus, an angel, or at least by a family member. I did meet a master teacher. I'll get to that later. But Maggie came first. After all, she had been close family for many years. And whoever is responsible for setting up the welcome wagon over there certainly knew what a delightful experience it would be for me to be greeted by her. Hey, the saying, you know, if you've lost a pet, you will see them again, my friends. Continuing on, but I did understand our daughter's reaction. If mother was going to have the opportunity of visiting beyond the veil, the least she could do was make it awe-inspiring with some dramatic religious overtones. Fact of the matter is, there is nothing particularly religious about the other side. Spiritual, yes. Hey, there you go. But nothing characterized by adherence to religion or a religion. See, my friends, when you put your faith in the Bible, you put your faith in a book. Religion, a money-making business. Spirituality is the essence of who you are and what you should be learning about. To use Webster's definition of the term, religion, as Harold Richard Stark, M.D., said after his near-death experience and tour of the other side, "One does not go around in an ecstasy of religious fervor, but it is a place of ordered activity." I know that. What I came to realize is that there is love, a love connection between the two worlds. A stream of energy that forms a heart bond between two souls that is the strongest at the time of transition. Love comes out to greet you, wearing the form that will be most meaningful to you at the time. In my case, it was our precious dog. And yes, dogs have souls. Plato knew it, and so did St. Augustine, along with most other true saints and sages. And yes, they can communicate audibly in our language in that other world. They have done so in the physical realm, too, as evidenced in certain passages of the Bible. Later at home, after my recovery, I discovered in Joseph Campbell's writings that animals are equals at least, and sometimes are superiors. The animal has powers that the human doesn't have. The shaman, for instance, will often have an animal familiar, that is to say, the spirit of some animal species that will be his support and his teacher. So you people out there with animals, make sure you treat them better. It says that they are equals. I also found that animals were held in veneration by all races of antiquity. And ancient wisdom texts tell us that the dog, because of its faithfulness, denotes the relationship which should exist between disciple and master, or between the initiate and his god. Dog's ability to sense and follow unseen persons for miles symbolizes that transcendental power by which the philosopher follows the thread of truth through the labyrinth of earthly error. The dog is also the symbol of Mercury. Mercury was the messenger of the gods in Roman mythology. Valerie Woolman, author of The Meaning of Your Dreams, has written that people who are particularly fond of dogs tend to regard them unconsciously as human beings and to identify very closely with them. This is especially true in what we call the non-physical world, where all relationships are on a higher frequency. Even though we take our consciousness with us, we don't instantly become totally enlightened. We find that our thoughts and feelings are more in tune with the spiritual reality of all that is. And what is spiritual? To me, it is the true inner essence of everything. The rock, the tree, the animal, the person. It is the spirit, the unique field of energy within each mineral, plant, animal, and human. Having fun with her dog in the higher realm of color. So Maggie and I were interacting on a finer wavelength, and although we had dropped our physical vehicles, our bodies were made visible to the senses through an image in the mind projected as form. And she was as real to see and touch as she was when I'd held her in my arms in the physical world. My friend Maggie and I walked side by side, as we had so many times in that other place of being. Without any effort, we moved through a realm of ecstatic color. You know, what came to mind, you see the movie by Robin Williams, What Dreams May Come? Kind of like that. Maggie showed me how to shape forms out of energy by pressing with my mind. If you want the form to hold, you press firmly. This is a higher mental plane, and form is created with no bodily effort. An image of that which you wish to create is held in mind, and through intense focus is brought into expression. You can lock it in or release it. This was so new to me then, but later I found that it was pretty much old hat to near-death experiences. As Michael Talbot describes it in his book, The Holographic Universe, when the mind is in the higher frequencies of the near-death dimension, it continues to do what it does best, translate those frequencies into a world of appearances. I'll talk more about this later. Talbot also discusses the work of the Swedish mystic Emanuel Swedenborg, who was a skilled out-of-body visitor to the land of the dead, he says. That's Swedenborg. Hold on. Just going to take a drink of water. Believe that, despite its ghost-like and ephemeral qualities, heaven is actually a more fundamental level of reality than our own physical world. That the afterlife realm, that the afterlife realm and physical reality are different in degree, but not in kind. and that the material world is just a frozen version of the thought-built reality of heaven. How about that? I didn't experience heaven as ghost-like, but I do agree that the physical and non-physical worlds have a distinct similarity, with the latter actually feeling more real, heaven being more real. At least I felt a higher level of reality about myself while on that beautiful plane. Regarding the colors, the wisdom teachings of the Tibetan master Wao Hu tells us that colors as manifested on the physical plane show as their crudest and harshest. As the finer matter of the other planes is contacted, the beauty, the softness, and the exquisite quality of the different hues grow. The beauty transcends all conception. Maggie and I played in the color field, stepping into various hues and feeling their particular vibration. The matching quality of the colors fascinated me because I hadn't seen anything like them before and cannot to this day find words to describe the beauty of the shades and hues. It's been said that in addition to the colors of the spectrum, there are a vast number of vibratory color waves, some too low and others too high, be registered by the human optical apparatus. Let me read that again. In addition to the colors of the spectrum, there are a vast number of vibratory color waves. Some are low and others too high to be registered by the human optical apparatus. While I didn't have a mirror on the other side, I recognized that I had a body, and I experienced that I was looking through my eyes to see it, but what I was really observing through was my mind. Thus, without the physical optical apparatus, my awareness was expanded well beyond the seven fundamental color tones. Listening to the music of the spheres, that's the title for this part here. Each wave of color seemed to have a frequency of its own, giving off a particular sound that I interpreted as a beautiful chord of music. And dancing from color to color was like playing some cosmic musical instrument in the heavenly symphony. It was fun, and Maggie seemed to enjoy it too. We heard the expression music of the sphere. I wasn't sure what that meant until my visit to the other side. There I heard the music divine, sometimes sounding like chants of angels, playing in the background. Later, when I told John about it, he remembered that the phrase was attributed to Pythagoras, who was born in 600 BC and considered the world's first philosopher. He found the library reference in a book in our library. The Pythagoreans believed that everything which existed had a voice, and that all creatures were eternally singing the praise of the Creator. Man fails to hear these divine melodies because his soul is enmeshed in the illusion of material existence. Then he liberates himself from the bondage of the lower world with his sense limitations. The music of the spheres will again be audible as it was in the golden age. Harmony recognizes harmony, and when the human soul regains its true estate, it will not only hear the celestial choir, but also join with it in an everlasting anthem of praise to the eternal good controlling the infinite number of parts and conditions of being. Moving on, we entered a lovely green meadow filled with flowers. Here we were walking with more of a sense of the movement of our bodies. This place reminded me of a vision I had experienced several years ago, in which I picked the flower and held it in my hand, but it was also exactly where it was before. Wondering what would happen here, I reached for a blossom, and as I took it in my hand, another one appeared in its place. How wonderful! the beauty can't be marred. Nothing is lost. There is ever more of the substance that stands behind each expression, just waiting to flow into its perfect pattern of being. Visiting her dog Maggie's heaven, Maggie wanted to show me where she lived, which she said was patterned by much of what she remembered of the homes where she had lived with us. She had held the images in her mind, breath, and created the place of resonance. As she spoke of her home, we arrived there, which didn't seem strange at all at the time. Later, I realized that it was a rather bizarre experience, not only the instantaneous being there in the space of a thought, but also the idea that our dog actually had a beautiful home on the other side. Again, John later helped me to understand this when he said that Emanuel Swedenborg, a frequent visitor to the heavenly realm, wrote that animals do indeed have abodes in the spiritual world, pointing out that they have such knowledge, for it is implanted in them to know of themselves their homes and dwelling places, as is evident from abundant observation. As I stood in Maggie's dwelling place, I felt great joy. There was a fire in the fireplace, giving the room a warm, friendly glow. A wall of books, of course. Beautiful paintings and oriental rugs. One whole side of the room was glass that you could look out on a vista of rolling hills, bubbly streams, and many trees. We sat comfortably on one of the soft, velvety love seats, content just to be together. I stroked her beautiful head, and she laid her paws across my legs. The touch again was so precious, for there was so much love between us. Without spoken words, we shared memories and deep feelings. Much communication over here was silent, although sound was sometimes used simply because it was so pleasant. My heart overflowed with gratitude for the opportunity to have this reunion and see my loved one so joyously, vibrantly alive in what can truly be called paradise. Reluctantly, we left Mag's lovely home, for I felt an inner prodding to move on. Next, we went to a place she called the Lookout. It appeared to be only an overhang on a high cliff, but the view was intensely magnified. I could look into the world I'd left behind as though peering into a monitor, if I chose to do so. No one spent a lot of time here, Maggie said, but some occasionally stopped by to check on what was going on in the earthly realm. I decided not to. I wanted to keep moving on in this world of exquisite bliss, perceiving the reality of time on the other side. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that we are what we think about all day long. What this means is that our thoughts and feelings set up a vibration in the energy field around us. As the particular trend of thought continues, it impresses the energy and forms a pattern, which begins to externalize itself as conditions, situations, and experiences in our lives. I let the cat in. One of our cats was trying to get in. We literally... Well, it's time to end the show anyway, my friends. Thank you for listening. May the creator of the universe remember, please pray more to the creator of the universe. More than just a word. You're actually making contact with the creator when you do that. Simple prayer. That's all you need to do. Speak those words. Creator of the universe, and you will see that your prayers will become more real. So it's been good. Thank you very much for listening. I love you, and may the creator of the universe bless us. Everyone. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.